On this episode of DC On Screen, we are talking about the DC fandom numbers, Zack Snyder's reaction to the Batman trailer, a whole lot of teases about what we should expect from Buschetti's Flash, Batgirl casting, and maybe a little about the drama coming out of Batwoman's former leading lady, Ruby Rose. All that, and so much more. Honestly, we do have a lot. Right after these words from our mystery sponsors. Welcome into DC On Screen episode 648. On this podcast, we share our honest opinions about the DC Comics multiverse on film and television. If it has been released, it is fair game. So beware of spoilers. I'm David C. Robertson, and this, the man who taught me everything I know about being a Lunar, Jason Goss.
Bop!
A Lunar's someone with a balloon fetish for the uninitiated. They stroke the balloon, caress it, rub it in between their thighs, jab it with sharp objects, everything you would normally do with a lover. I'm not one.
Talk to it, caress it, support it emotionally.
Remember when you told me about it and I was like, you're full of hot air.
You have yet to burst my bubble.
You ever just like creep up on it in the night and kind of wiggle your finger against the end of its tie there, the little balloon knot?
The little umbilical cord at the bottom of all balloons? The belly button?
The asshole, whatever.
Yep.
I legit have a ghost balloon that's been watching me the last couple nights.
What does that mean?
Because I bought some balloons for me and the daughter to like bounce around, you know? Do the whole like... It's like air soccer, I guess, or something.
Yeah, sure. That's what you call it.
Boop, you know. And
how dare you involve your small daughter?
one of the few that survived is a little ghost balloon that I've got sitting on top of the shelf.
Gotcha. No, because I mean we're both into a lot of the supernatural podcasts, and you, I think, more so than I. But yeah, no, I thought you were actually talking about some sort of. But what the hell's a ghost balloon? What is it?
Ah.
I haven't heard that.
That was a very different spell.
Mm. Yeah. Before we get into the news, I would like to remind you that you can go to dconscreen.com to find links to our Patreon, where $5 a month gets you access to exclusive content. I actually just put up a t-shirt design there. And yeah, we can't sell it. Warner Brothers keeps taking it down. So I'm giving it to you for free. And what it is a DC On Screen shirt with me and Jason in the style of the 2016 Suicide Squad skulls. And there are two different versions of the design. Nice. I can't sell it to you, but I can sell you a service where you can get it for free. How's that?
There you go.
You can download it and print it wherever. There's also a donate button on our site and a link to our merch store if you'd like to support us in other ways. As always, though, thank you for any support you can throw our way. It helps keep the lights on. It really does. You ready for news, man?
Yeah.
Are you digging it?
I'm in.
All right. So first up, I can't speak today. I've been up a really long time. I had to get an oil pan replaced. DC Fandom, man. The interactive online fan event. Everybody listening probably knows what the hell that is.
Mm-hmm.
They reported that this year's event shattered last year's viewership numbers with 66 million views worldwide to date. That's triple the amount they got last year.
That's not bad.
No way it's not happening again next year.
I mean, it was a tighter show. Yeah, there's a really good chance that they have a lot to like lean on there.
Mm-hmm. I would argue that it can be tighter still.
Yeah.
just keep whipping that batter. Get it taut, y'all. Come on.
Need that dough.
Warner Brothers. In this new article from the Hollywood Reporter, they were talking about the decision and the impact of the hybrid releases. They did confirm that they are doing away with that. With the same day release on HBO Max, there is going to be a 45-day window after theatrical release in 2022 and beyond. But They also revealed in this article that Warner Brothers is planning to make roughly 12 movies a year for theatrical release and 12 movies for HBO Max. And Ann Sarnoff was saying, no great surprise, the ones we're putting in theaters are the ones we think will work. It's not just about budget size. It's also about genre and the behavioral patterns of people. I would love to put dramas and comedies on the biggest screen possible. It's just right now they aren't opening. Honestly, they weren't opening pre-COVID either.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a real thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't need Ann Sarnoff. You can sit there and say, I don't trust that Ann Sarnoff after the Snyder thing. Yeah, I don't either. But she's not wrong here. you can go to Box Office Mojo and look that shit up. Like, no, nothing but like Marvel's working.
Yeah.
Nothing but like big tent, you know, comic book movies are working right now.
We've talked extensively about like there was some death of theater way before 2019.
Mm-hmm. And you can tout Joker all you want. That shit was an outlier.
Yeah.
It said Joker on it. That's the only, and Todd Phillips knew it. Like, he was like, this stuff that I'm about to make, I ain't going to make nothing. Let's call it Joker.
They didn't call it the Purple Comedian or some shit.
You're right.
That landscape was changing long before everything else changed.
And when COVID came, it expedited that process.
Yeah.
So I teased it up front. Zack Snyder has reacted to the new Batman trailer. He said...
Hated it.
No.
God, I'm surprised.
Now, listen closely.
Hold on. You're telling me that positive motherfucker had things to say.
He did.
Okay.
He said, and I quote, "This is awesome." End quote.
I believe he meant all three words.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply.
Indeed. Yeah. Anyway. Moving on to The Flash.
I feel like people are going to make 18-minute YouTube videos about that.
Yeah.
He just likes it. He loves these characters, man. Of course he likes the fucking awesome ass trailer. Okay.
Yeah. Over the Flash, according to Barbara Muschietti, the Flash filmmakers had to convince Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton to return. She says Batman is a very dark character. I think once actors play the role, they're done. And I think this was a bit of a surprise for both of them. It took them a while to warm up to the idea of reprising, of playing this character again, especially Keaton. Keaton had not been Batman for 30 years. She said it was amazing to see that both of them, both Ben Affleck and Michael Keaton, got quite emotional at coming back once they were with us, and they got to put on the cowl and the cape. I think they both felt the small joy that comes with playing that character and had fun with it. It was a great experience. Which this is basically echoing what Affleck was saying a few weeks ago, where he was saying, no, it was a really great experience. Hopefully these aren't just NDAs talking.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not, people are, he's had a great time and this. Yeah, but, let's remember 2017.
I know. I mean.
But I always hope for the best.
Looking at it, though, I think they did enjoy the return in these circumstances.
I certainly hope so. She also says, though, that they had to restart the production when COVID hit. She said, we prepared a lot and we were ready to go because we're really good planners. And then a global pandemic hit and then all the plans went to the toilet and we had to start again. The first Sounds part of right. the process was truly seeing how we were going to keep everything together and had no parameters because no one knew what was going to happen. But we were all absolutely excited to make this movie and we all stuck together, Ezra, Andy, I, our team. It basically meant that we had to wait for about 6 months. We had more prep time, got the script to a better place, which is always fantastic. And then we started shooting in April. It's been a nonstop crazy adventure because COVID doesn't make things easy, but we're also fortunate to be working and healthy. We haven't shut down the movie. We've been extremely lucky. It's luck. That's how we've prepared it, with a lot of luck. And also, Ezra and Andy together have more energy than any human pair I've ever met. They've kept us all going basically when things were hard, because they are hard in the world we're living. They just inspired us and kept us going, and we're almost there at the finish line. The more these people, honestly, the more these people talk about The Flash, the more I want to watch it.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, I, as much as anyone, I'm sorry that Ray Fisher stepped away.
Yeah. He did bounce. For good reasons, but he bounced.
He did. For good reasons. What could have been? I hate that we always have to think that.
Yeah. Oh, well. I would love to see him there, but yeah, I get why it's not happening.
So anyway, Andy Muschietti was talking about opening up the DC movies multiverse. He says, I can't tell you a lot about the future of this, the future of the multiverse in DC, but I can tell you. I'm very excited about it as a filmmaker. Cracking this acorn and opening the window to new adventures in the multiverse is super exciting. This was at DC Fandom in China, by the way. Mm-hmm. And he said, the multiverse has been a thing in the comic book world for decades and decades and decades. And I think it's a good time to take it into the movies. It's also very special that our multiverse is not just a multiverse of characters. It's a multiverse of films. It's a cinematic multiverse, as you might already know by looking at the names that are showing up, like Michael Keaton reprising his role as Batman. It's very exciting, and one of the reasons that I got closer and closer to this project. We can tell you that there are surprises. We cannot reveal what they are, but they will probably blow your socks off. They will. I think the less we talk about it, the better.
Agreed.
There's excitement behind the camera about those surprises, but you're better not knowing them until you see them on the big screen.
I'm with him. I want to, like, sit. I would like to sit in a theater at my house, whatever the fuck is the norm at the time, whatever, and just, like, sprawl my entire spine out and go, oh my God, are you fucking kidding me? Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember, like, the Crisis event, you know, when certain things happened on Crisis event and CW, like, having to, like, the neighbors knew that Barry and Lucifer had shown up when I was watching that.
Yeah.
It was, I screamed, like, my throat hurt. It was wonderful. Yeah,
me too. Ezra Miller was, blah, blah, blah. Talking about Barry's origin story in his arc after Justice League. Mm-hmm. And says, I think this is also at DC Fandom China, says, I think this is a story that precipitates. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say that word for me. A lot of change for Barry Allen in more ways than one. I think it really carries him from being sort of the person who we met in the Justice League films. I like that he said films. It makes me hope that they're just, like, straddling the line and just, like, not actually, like, not actually confirming that which one is canon. He says The Flash takes him from that place of
whenever part two happens. We already talked about it.
Yeah. The Flash takes him from that place of a young person who has come to his powers but doesn't quite know how to manifest them, who's joined a legion of superheroes but doesn't quite know his place in the context of it, and it takes him from there to really, in my mind, being Barry Allen, being The Flash. I think in some ways it's an origin story and a coming into his own story, so it's a big one, a big arc for Barry. And then Andy Muschietti talked about how it's an emotional story about a boy looking for his mother, and how that arc is bonding Barry to the orphaned Batman of two universes. He says, mainly the emotional aspects of the story were very compelling to me. Obviously, it's a superhero movie. It's a big spectacle adventure. But what really brought me into it was the emotional power of it. There's an emotional message in the story. It's also a time traveling story, which is always very attractive to me. Mm-hmm. Time travel has something that is inherently compelling in general, but this one is very special because it's a very intimate conflict. It's about a boy who's looking for his mother, and that's what was so attractive to me, that emotional drive. I had not even really thought about, like, the boy looking for his mother bonding with the orphaned Batman. I had not even thought about that notion.
Oh, yeah.
For some reason. Probably because I'm not very bright.
I mean, most of the Justice League has, you know, some, like, parental issue.
Mm-hmm. So, this is interesting.
Orphans, displaced, whatever. But
yeah. Ezra was talking about, someone asked about the villains. And he says, Ezra says, in one way, I would say there's a few villains, or so-called villains, who are in our movie. And then in another way, I'd say there aren't any villains in a way that might be a part of the exploration and message of the movie. I'm going to say those things because together they make no sense. And it leaves it all kind of cryptic and mysterious, which is good for a villain to have an air of mystery that surrounds them until they pop out.
Nice.
I'm just assuming, and I don't know, this is conjecture on my part. I'm assuming that long-haired Barry is the villain.
Could be.
And then we have, and especially with this, like, Michael Keaton was talking in an interview, and he was comparing The Flash to Multiplicity. And he said, I mean, I just did The Flash, and there's a similarity in how, well, I don't want to give away too much, but how he has to play against himself and with himself. And we were talking about the difficulty of making Multiplicity and the challenge. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, Mikey.
So, Kaleidoscope Batman. Gotcha.
I'm picking up where you're putting down. Mm-hmm. Kaleidoscope Batman, Kaleidoscope Flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But with Batman.
Right. And they've revealed that they have finished filming. It's wrapped. Filming is wrapped. They're just in post now. And in a troubling move, Marvel has moved Black Panther 2 to release 1 week after The Flash. I don't like this at all.
I'm having trouble caring.
I care because I don't want the Flash to get his legs taken out from under it.
No, I mean, I would have 3 years ago, but I'm having trouble caring right now.
Mm.
Because why? All of the release dates for like 2022 are cute, mm-hmm, until further notice.
That's a good point. But it just made me wonder, like, how soon till DC flinches? You know, Warner Brothers, they're very reactionary.
I agree, but it wouldn't be a matter of, like, flinching or posturing as far as the calendar goes. That's all just nonsense until we actually get there.
You know, I mean, as far as we're concerned right now, you know, they put out Dune in theaters. It was a success theatrically. It's a success on HBO Max. I don't think they're as worried about it as they were at this point. But I don't know. I feel like this the Black Panther sequel could be a bit of a, you know, throwing fear into the hearts of executives. Maybe not. I don't think they were doing it. I mean, their productions had to change because of COVID again. So as far as Marvel's concerned, so that's why they're moving that. I don't think it was of, you know, any kind of attack, you know?
Yeah, no, the proximity here doesn't. We'll see if it actually lands that way, first of all. And then if it doesn't, mm-hmm, that makes sense. If it does, okay, that's fine. Also, just yep. If I've learned anything over the last few years, I do not give a shit about the box office numbers.
I care about it only because, you know, one, Warner Brothers is totally reactionary to it.
Given that, yes. Yeah.
And, you know, two, if, you know, Flash doesn't do well enough, I'm going to have to hear, you know, literally freaking years of fans bickering about what those numbers meant. I'm still hearing people talk about how the Suicide Squad flopped.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, shut up.
I know. I've just gotten so hardened to those conversations that I don't give a fuck anymore.
You know, I'm hardened to it, but I'm still aggravated with it.
I don't know. I think I engage with those conversations just long enough for my brain to go, oh. And, you know, twit itself off somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Back in the what could have been category, James Wan revealed that Trench movie he was developing, mm-hmm, it was a secret Black Manta movie.
Yeah, I saw that. Which makes more sense.
It makes a hell of a lot more sense. I saw that news, I was like, oh. Yeah. Well, there it is. Like, I had the gif of Goldblum in my head. Like, oh, there you go. The final piece is in place.
I was having trouble figuring out how they were going to make a movie about a bunch of mindless creatures. But, yeah, Black Manta makes more sense. Also, you know, sad that it's not going to happen.
Yeah, but, you know, if Aquaman 2 is the success that Aquaman 1 was, if, you know, Black Manta, who is also in, you know, Aquaman 2, if he's as, you know, a standout as of a character as he was in the first movie, hell, man, who knows? We might get an HBO Max movie. We might get, who knows?
Oh, doors wide open. You know, like an him and Orm movie would be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Either of those even would be fantastic.
What, you mean like a porn?
Yeah, that's what I was going for.
They're just like sloshing around in water, playing with balloons.
Right, yeah.
You freak.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to balloon that's shame you.
The Manta helmet is, it's pretty standout to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know what they're going for. Can't fool me.
wink, also wink. At DC Fandom China, Zachary Levi did say that the new movie will take place about 2 years after the first movie. So that, yeah. You know.
Sounds right.
Give you some idea. Now, here's some cool stuff. Stuff I care about.
Oh, now we're into that portion. Gotcha.
More stuff I care about. I don't really care that the sequel was set 2 years later, but it seemed like a good point. I've heard some people asking, like, yeah, how long ago? Those kids are pretty damn grown. Well, here's your answer. 2 years.
I'm so sorry. Anyone didn't fast forward 2 minutes ago. But go ahead. Too late now.
Yeah, that's the way the cookie crumbles. You're Deadline. Deadline broke the news that Jacob Scipio, I think that's how you say his name, is in talks. He's been cast in Batgirl. He was in Bad Boys for Life. Mm-hmm. I don't know who he's playing here. They're not saying. Just no idea. For all I know, he could be James Gordon Jr. He could be Killer Moth. We have no idea.
Con McKean.
Yeah. And also someone said, I think Boris Kitt from The Hollywood Reporter said another key role in Batgirl, the son of the gangster villain who becomes romantically linked to. Well, you can take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
So he might be that. He might be that. He might be, you know, what was Falcone's kid's name?
Antoine? Probably something like Jr. I forget though.
I don't think it was Junior, but I just don't remember.
It just seems like something Carmine might do.
But Deadline broke this news that Jacob was cast. They also just kind of slipped this in. I thought this was clearly the headline, but whatever. That J.K. Simmons is set to return as Commissioner Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the following Monday, it was released that they have their primary villain, the villain Firefly, played by Brendan Fraser. I'm very excited about that.
Sorry, I'm making annoying sounds. I was very excited.
You sound like that freaking Skeksis in Dark Crystal.
I just felt like a goat about to be fed is what I felt like that sounded like. But
I knew you wouldn't know Dark
the Crystal. The point is, hell yes.
So I'm excited about that. Firefly, if you don't know, out there, Garfield Lens, a pyromaniac supervillain. He's got wings. He's got a blowtorch. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
and both Firefly and Killer Moth were real big in the Batgirl Year One comic. So that's why I was suggesting that maybe Jacob was playing, you know, Killer Moth.
Right.
Moving on down the line, this is pretty interesting. On Tuesday, they revealed that Darnell Metayer, I can't say that name, and Josh Peters are set to write Val Zod, an upcoming HBO Max series. And now we knew that Val Zod was in development. Michael B. Jordan was involved. He might be playing Val Zod. He might just be executive producing. But dear these God, guys, please both. I'm fine with it. These guys wrote the upcoming Transformers Rise of the Beasts. So, you know, I got no interest in that, so I won't see it. But fingers crossed that they're pretty good. If, you know, I'm not going to judge them based on Transformer movies that they didn't write.
Yeah. I mean, look at anybody's IMDb and there's going to be something on there where you go, oh, no, seriously?
Navy SEALs?
Oh, Lord, why? And then the answer is generally $250,000. Oh, okay. Okay.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Just for the first draft that I'm still blamed for. Oh, okay. It went through six rewrites. Oh, gotcha. 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 Meh. Cool. Cool. Cool.
Meh. You have never ceased to draw upon the knowledge from that Thomas Lennon book.
It is valuable knowledge.
Comedian Thomas Lennon wrote a book about how to write a screenplay, not for art, but for money.
God damn it. What is...
Jason read and devoured and basically like regurgitated to me, probably verbatim.
It was very useful. Would you like to know about the secret In-N-Out menu? Also, what the fuck is the... what is the dude in the in Reno with the bulletproof vest on the entire time?
I don't know.
No, it's not Garcia.
That wasn't my jam. I like Thomas Lennon.
It wasn't just Thomas Lennon that wrote the book, though. That's my point. I can't remember the other guy's name. It's bothering me right now.
I know what your point is, but I can't help you.
I feel ashamed and inadequate.
I'm so sorry.
I can't source it correctly.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. I'll live with the shame.
I feel dirty saying this name, but Zack Snyder was talking to Bro Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the Matt Reeves reboot of the Batman, you know, and he says he was talking about the villains, and they asked if he wanted to use those villains in the DCEU, and he says very much so. Obviously, Catwoman is someone we talked about, and we had a Riddler concept that we talked about. Remember, the Riddler was kind of like the one who figured out the anti-life equation on Earth in the spec scripts.
All right. Fucking all right.
For Lex Luthor. But he says, frankly, I'd love to see Penguin. I think it would be cool. Well,
I feel like I need about 30 minutes to process that.
I know.
Oof.
I know you do.
That's good, though. That's good.
It is. He says, I'd love to see Penguin. I think it'll be cool. I think that's a great character, and I'd love to see a version of Penguin that has an inherent camp to it. It'd be awesome to see how you could deconstruct it and make him something crazy. Me too, man.
Yeah.
Me too. Damn it.
Anyway. What, was it Meth Riddler? Because that would be funny.
That would be funny.
One who slouched so long he turned his back into a question mark, but he was taking so many steroids and meths that he became stronger in the meantime for some reason.
Yeah, that was such a weird turn.
It was a weird turn. It was a nice idea, though, that he was like watching every street corner in Gotham and came up with something, but parts of it that were really neat.
Well, that's I don't know how to speak. That's the end of our news segment. And we're going to go to break. See you in a second, guys. Gals, everybody, the surprisingly inclusive term y'all.
It is, if you think about it.
Oh, it absolutely is. It's a fantastic term. It's never used that way,
but.
No, it's never used that way, but, you know, it really does. Just, it covers everybody. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
The South accidentally did something not bigoted.
Yeah, and yet I remember it mostly as, y'all get the fuck out of here.
Don't let the sun come down on y'all.
Yeah.
All right. Be right back.
Did one nice thing and misused it.
We can turn it around. We can take y'all back. All right, we're back. Woo! So I don't know how I missed this. I think because, as previously stated, not very bright. Also, bad podcast host. But
disagree all around. Going forward, sure. What you got?
At the beginning of September. And you guys can let me know if I didn't miss it, because, God, I don't remember these shows.
It's a lot.
Like, sincerely. Look, sincerely, people will be like, ah, ha, ha, thing you said. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's
a math problem for the brain. We just do what we do every couple weeks and try to get everything done and processed. And then you can't do that and then still look back on, you know, 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, and then you've got these guys like checking their notes and like, I mean, you just posted this yesterday. I don't understand how you don't know what you said in this specific point in the 2-hour podcast. No, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't remember yesterday. I don't remember this morning.
7 minutes ago, kind of hazy.
My guess is I was thinking, hey, about time I checked Twitter again. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so earlier, like early September, like the 3rd of September, this news dropped. Didn't see it. Didn't notice it. Excited about it, though. Found out about it. The Dead Boy Detectives, created by Neil Gaiman. Apparently, HBO Max has ordered a pilot for a potential series. I do want to get that out there on the show because I just saw those cats on Doom Patrol. It's from the same creators, same, you know, Berlanti Productions and all that. I really, really, really hope that they get Sebastian Croft and Ty Tennant, yes, son of David Tennant, back to play Roland and Payne.
I was bracing myself. Sorry. I'd seen you were excited about the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I was too. But you're telling me this might be real.
It might be real.
In American parlance, you're saying there's a chance.
Yes. But, you know, the reports say that Sebastian Croft and Ty Tennant are not believed to be attached to the pilot at this time. And we haven't gotten an update on that.
That would fit the series, though.
Yeah, in some regards. But I want to see those cats do it. I'll be damned if that Doom Patrol episode didn't feel like a pilot in and of itself.
That's what I'm saying, though. The origin of Doom Patrol has some, you know, backdoor pilot recasting history. So
it won't just entirely break my heart. Thank God they got rid of him.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying not fit. And I'll be sad if it's not them. They sold the fuck out of those characters.
They did. God they did. Damn, everybody was great. Everybody was great.
I was in. I was so in.
Yeah. They were absolutely delightful.
I wanted to be them out there with Dorothy.
So, reps for HBO Max and WBTV declined to comment. So, whatever the hell that means.
Ah, fuck them. official position, please.
Yep. And Seth Graham Smith. Which is funny that we got so much news from Andy Muschietti, who's doing The Flash. Seth Graham Smith was doing The Flash a few years ago, but he's the showrunner on Green Lantern, the HBO Max series. And he says that it is a big undertaking and it will take a while to become a reality, but it'll be worth the wait. He says the show is gigantic. It has taken quite a bit of time to get to this point, and it's just a big, big undertaking. It's going really well. All I can say is that it's going really well, and there are going to be Green Lanterns in it, and it's going to be on HBO Max.
Hey, look, it's going on. It's all right. Everything's going to be green. It's all good. Keep giving them money. Yeah. It's fine.
Right? Did you see this Armageddon trailer for The Flash? I know you haven't seen the last season of The Flash. Mm-mm. I mean, it's just got, you know, friggin' Kate McNamara, you know, Mia Queen is who that is. And it's got Black Lightning in it. And and it looks like he's like giving Flash, you know, a pep talk, but he's like saying the same shit he said to his students. He's like, "Where's the future?" And Barry goes, "Right here." Like, yeah. Like, I got too excited about that shit.
That was one of my favorite phrases out of the entire series, though.
Yeah, I got too excited. We got freaking Ray Palmer back as the Atom. And it's great because
I was,
you know,
looking forward to this being the thing that finally made me like stay up all night watching all the CW shows to catch back up.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently the time is here.
Yep. And they got like a great little clip in this trailer where Ray shows up in Adam suit and goes, "Oh, Barry, you've been lifting some weights or whatever. You've been working out." And he's like, "Oh, thank you. Finally, someone noticed." It looks quite delightful. Adorable. It looks great. I'm on board for it. We've got Batwoman in the trailer. I mean, it looks good. It looks fun.
Of course I'm in. I'm just behind.
And that's kicking off in November. November 16th.
God damn it. That's not enough time.
I know.
I need more time.
I know. Over to Young Justice.
Just to keep things still long enough to watch everything.
Yeah. Yeah. They did say that over on Young Justice, the fourth season of Young Justice, which has already started, Wiseman says that episode 403 will drop. Sorry, it's already dropped. 10/21. I'm sorry, I forgot that. You know, we meant to do this episode of a while back, and we didn't do it.
That was last week.
Yep, I've got different things written down. I forgot about them.
Sorry.
Anyway, so the show is going to drop every Thursday through December 30th, and then the back half of the season, 414 to 426, will drop weekly in spring 2022. That's what I was trying to get to.
There you go.
When it abruptly stops in December, don't freak out, y'all.
It's okay.
All right, so look, man, we got a lot of pages here, and the reason is I did a deep dive and had prepped a ton about this Ruby Rose reveals the real reason she left Batwoman thing.
Okay.
And I've also decided I don't want to talk about all that. Like, we will talk about it. Like, but it's basically like, since I started prepping this episode, it basically evolved into like, you know how like over the past like 2 years, this whole Ray Fisher thing has been like massive overall. Like, this shit with Batwoman, like, advanced that much in, like, a week.
Yeah.
Because, like, and this is the weird thing, like, so she comes out.
I saw a lot of jokes about snowmen that didn't appear.
About what?
Snowmen that didn't appear.
I don't even know what that is.
Well, because, you know, that they were going to cast Jason Momoa as, you know,
Jack Frost, right, or whatever. Right, right. Gotcha. Yeah. So yeah, so she came out.
I did see this happen just, you know, 12 hours at a time.
Yeah, it was weird, man. She says she's going to tell you the whole story about the world, the whole story about what happened. And, she first calls out Peter Roth and says, that, you know, he left after getting promoted to the highest position because he couldn't stop making young women steam his pants around his crotch while he was still wearing them.
Weird.
Apparently, he also put a private investigator on her, and then he fired that private investigator because the report didn't fit the narrative or his narrative. She's got, you know, talking about like how they demanded that she was back 10 days after her surgery, and she had a broken neck and a split rib and a tumor.
Very different origins and on she that, got, but okay.
Yeah, she says she got injured on set. Yeah. I don't know what the thing with the tumor was. She literally just says, what else would you like me to share? The broken neck or the broken rib split in two and the tumor? And then, you know, I don't know. They wanted her back on set 10 days after the surgery.
Tumors grow, but...
Yeah. I don't know how that would come from...
I'm credulous about that part. That's all.
I mean, maybe they had to remove the tumor and they still wanted her back 10 days after. I don't know.
Oh, no, that sounds right. They could have been like, well, you know, it's an outpatient surgery, right? So like you're here at 6, five, we need you at 5, really, for being honest.
Yeah. They told her the whole, according to her, they told her the whole crew and cast would be fired and she would let everyone down. Peter Roth told her he would not recast. And she would just lose the studio millions by getting injured on set. She says she didn't quit. They fired her. She followed orders. And if she wanted to stay, she was going to have to sign her rights away. She tried to, you know, get them to stop screaming on set. She called out Carolyn Dries for having no heart and wanted them to finish the season throughout the pandemic after everybody had already shut down. And when they did shut down, it was because the government made them. She said some of the accidents that happened on set were because people were freaking out and looking at COVID updates all day, but then turns around and says that there was a PA who became paraplegic and they tried to blame it on her being on her phone. And she said they're PAs, they live on their phone. That's what they do. That's their job. But then also tried to make it like people were worried about COVID. They were checking their phones. I don't know. That kind of doesn't mesh with me, but it's okay. She complained that they didn't give them therapy after they watched a stuntman get burned and his face melted off. It's a lot of stuff that sounds really bad. Honestly, it sounds like a really bad set.
I mean, I wouldn't take the job.
No, absolutely not. She says, Dougray Scott heard a female stunt double and he yelled at women and he was an absolute nightmare. And he called her agent to ask how he can get out after she left. And the agent said, I don't know, break your neck.
Nice.
I don't know. And then she complains about Camrys, the guy that plays Luke, saying that, you know, he said, yeah, well, maybe if people were not late, we would make our days. And she was apparently in the hospital, and that's why she was late. Okay. They wouldn't drive. They wouldn't give her a driver. They made her get a taxi after her surgery. They made her go and, you know, do magazine shoots in costume, made her hide her scar. And there's a whole bunch of stuff. Now, on the other side of that, Warner Brothers releases a statement saying, despite the revisionistic history that Ruby Rose is now sharing online, aimed at the producers, the cast and the crew and the network and the studio, the truth is that Warner Brothers Television had decided not to exercise its option to engage Ruby for season two based on multiple complaints about workplace behavior that were extensively reviewed and handled privately out of respect for all concerned. Which is kind of what happened. They all made like it was a mutual decision and everything last year. Then there was this production assistant who came out and said Ruby Rose was cruel. She was a tyrant on set. This guy named Alexander J. Baxter. By the way, Comic Book Resources independently verified Baxter's claim that he worked on the season. Ruby Rose is trying to say that he didn't. Subsequently, she's coming out and saying, I can't find anyone who ever knew him. So maybe he's a hitman. You know, who knows? But, he says, you know, she demanded shit. She was like partying and wouldn't come in. She was always late. He refers to her injury as a supposed injury. I don't know how you fake the surgery video and all that shit exactly, but the x-rays and stuff.
Yeah.
So that chips away at his credibility for me. She stormed off set. She yelled at people. She did all sorts of awful things. She was an absolute diva, total, you know, horrible person. But here's the funny thing. Camrys Johnson, again, the guy that played Luke, seems to indicate that that's all true. Dougray Scott denies that he ever did anything wrong and also says pretty much the same things. Like, Camrys Johnson says, she was fired. It is very hard to be fired when you're the lead. Imagine what you have to do for that to happen. And this is not the first time he's thrown shade at her. Like, when they announced earlier or last year, you know, that she was leaving, he made a couple of comments in the press where it seemed like he was very happy about that. But, you know, I don't know. And then she doubled down on claims and posted a bunch of emails, and I'm not going to read those because they're really long. There's so many, but I mean, is all the emails are just her complaining, like, yes, about bad things that are going on possibly, but she's like, they need to stop yelling. And if you're late every time and causing, you know, tumult, you know, on the set, maybe that's why they're yelling. And they're also dealing with COVID stuff. So they're trying to get things done. And, you know, I'm sure it was a very stressful set. I'm also sure that there were a lot of, I don't think she's lying. I just think she's also a diva. I think everybody's in the wrong here, honestly, based on everything I'm reading. Yeah, no, yeah. Based on everything I'm seeing, I'm just like, yeah, y'all are all awful. Like, everybody's awful here. Warner Brothers said they did an internal, you know, investigation and found no wrongdoing by Dougray Scott. They have he's not even on the show anymore. They have no reason to lie about that guy. They even called him a consummate professional. They said, we condemn the comments made by Ruby Rose. Now, I don't trust Warner Brothers either, but, you know, I'm not seeing their percentage in lying about a guy who's not on the show anymore.
Yeah. Agreed there.
And they doubled down on their claim, we did not pick up Ruby Rose's option for an additional season because of multiple complaints about workplace behavior. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, this whole section could have gone on for hours. And I tried to just summarize it. I know a lot of people are like, totally in Ruby Rose's corner, and I get it, but, you know, especially after the Ray Fisher shit. Actually, Ray Fisher is another person who's in Ruby's corner. It's just weird to me that, like, nobody in the cast is like stepping up and going like, yeah. I mean, you know, at the very, you would think that, yeah, you could say, yeah, they're in under, you know, NDAs. They can't say that, but they're going out of their way to say like, screw her, which is telling in its own way. Like, I don't think there agreed. Are, there I mean, are no heroes is my, yeah.
Her and Ray are very different situations in the sense that like Ray has really never gotten any like redress to what he says.
Right.
Other than just kind of studio bullshit that was clearly written by lawyers. Mm-hmm. Whereas Ruby is getting people, like specific people, you know, with their check mark by their name saying, no. I'm not sure. God, it would take a lot of investigation, but I wouldn't even speculate on it. But yeah, like you said, like the Ruby and CW situation is like, man, it really does sound like CW did some terrible shit. I mean, you realize Tom Welling still has like PTSD about going to Vancouver.
Oh yeah, though there's the I believe
they've gotten better since then, and they're still terrible.
Yeah, I believe her, but you know there are things that she says in her report, but, whatever.
But then there's all the stuff around her. I.e., where like, you're a piece of shit too. Instagram apparently. Story. I'm confused.
Well, I think there is like, yes, I do think it's too, absolutely too soon for her to go through all that surgery, and then be back on set in 10 days. But then, like, part of her claim was like, they required me back instead of just rewriting it so that I'm not on the show for a few weeks. And I'm like, baby, do you know how TV works? Like, they got a season planned. Like, you know how hard it is to just rewrite it so you're not on the show for a few weeks?
Yeah. Like, they didn't book you 3 weeks in Vancouver. Like,
and it wasn't like they were saying like, yeah, they needed her in costume for some, like, you know, Entertainment Weekly or some bullshit, you know, shoots for the crossover for Crisis. But it, you know, she's like, yeah, I can't do it. And they're like, if you don't do it, they're not going to do any of it. Like, the whole cover shoot goes away. They didn't tell her she had to do it. They're just saying, hey, here's the thing. And she felt like she had to do it. Now, yeah, maybe that's a mental, you know, game they're playing, or, you know, trying to make her feel bad about it. But,
oh, 100%.
You know.
Yeah. No, that's incredibly shady. I like,
it
there
is,
are parts
but
that she's, It's not even that I'm saying anything that she's saying about what happened in the production is wrong. I also just believe the other shitty shit.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like,
I believe all of it's bad.
I believe everything everyone's saying, and they were all terrible.
That's pretty much where I'm at. Like, I mean, maybe Dougray yelled at somebody, and I don't know. I don't like that dude anyway. So, you know, whatever. Whether he's abusive or not, like, still don't like him. He annoys me.
They're probably all terrible. That's what we know.
Yeah. That's what I'm comfortable saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I also think, like, you know, going back to how it's similar or dissimilar from Ray Fisher's story, you know, she, you know, with Ray, everybody stood up and backed him. Like, all of his cast members, all of his, you know, fellow cast members, they backed him.
Right.
He had like an army of people willing to talk to an investigator. I'm not seeing that with Ruby Rose.
No. Right.
I'm seeing everybody going, yeah, I mean, she was out clubbing the night before and she didn't come in on time. This was before the surgery. Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We didn't make her day because she didn't come in. Oh, okay. I'm like, yeah, this is a hard schedule. They're working 6 days a week. You know, 18-hour days, 16-hour days.
Yeah, displaced from your family for like a third of a year minimum.
Mm-hmm. And what's funny is she's like complaining. One of the things that kind of pissed me off, honestly, was she was like saying that Cameras has no right to talk because he comes in 2 days a week. But she's like holding up crew members who are there for like 5 hours after she's there. You know what I mean? Like, the crew was there way before her setting up. The crew was there after her taking shit down, getting things done, ready for the next day. And she's gone. But she's like, you know, talking about how, you know, everybody there is unprofessional. You know, it's like, yeah, it's kind of hypocritical.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, that's boring shit. I don't want to keep going on about it. I guess we'll see where it goes.
They're all terrible. Let's see.
No. But, you know, a guy getting burned all over his body, third degree burns all over his body, and a lady getting paralyzed, you know, I would say that no movie is worth that. No TV show is worth that.
No.
But I'd also say especially not Batwoman. Can you imagine being the person that, like, got physically destroyed, crippled, burned alive, you know? And then they're like, oh, man, what happened? Well, I was making Batwoman.
Yeah, you don't want someone to look at you and go, oh, for that?
Oh. That's rough, man. I mean, season one was all right. It was pretty good. But really?
Wait, you got...
That wasn't worth that.
Come on, you got crippled on the set of Baywatch? Oh. You okay?
God, the level of just despondency. I don't know if I could continue on knowing that.
Yeah.
Bad enough I had to work on that set.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm excited about this. someone leaked this, and the Warner Brothers has quickly put out copyright claims and had the pictures taken down, which tell me it's real.
Good start.
Someone leaked a multiverse Super Smash Brothers-like game for Warner Brothers. Leaked the character select screen as it is currently. Here are the characters we're talking about on this character select screen. Steven Universe, Adventure Time, Batman, Harley Quinn,
mm-hmm.
Superman, Wonder Woman, Gandalf, Rick and Morty, Tom and Jerry,
mm-hmm.
Bugs Bunny, and a new mystery character.
Hey, I mean, hot take, by the way. I think Bugs Bunny could take Batman.
Hmm. Well, I mean, he operates outside of the laws of physics.
Exactly.
As Batman knows.
I do not think Batman could contain that bunny.
Then again, I kind of want to see, you know, Batman and drag pulling the same shit Bugs used to do to Elmer.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I would also like to see either Bugs or Batman with Rick and Morty.
Right?
Either fucking way this episode goes, I'm tuning in.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love the idea of Super Smash Brothers. I've enjoyed the game when I've been able to play it.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean and I love fighting games. I love I love that genre. So the idea of having all of these characters, all the Warner Brothers characters in one universe fighting each other is so much fun to me.
Oh, it's
better put Shaggy and Scooby Doo in there, man. DC
universe on crack, man. I mean,
yeah. I need Shaggy. I need Scooby Doo. I need,
hell yeah,
like all of them. Just like bringing Space Ghost, freaking Aqua Teen Hunger Johnny Force. Johnny Bravo. Yes, Johnny Bravo. Shit, yes. Let's do that. Oh my god.
Or fucking Brendan from Home Movies failing to fight anyone successfully.
I need Dexter and Dee Dee, man.
Yeah.
The Batman has infiltrated my laboratory. Yes, 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 yes.
Hell yeah.
I do all that. So anyway, last piece of news, and then we're done for this episode. Can you believe it?
Barely, but go for it.
It is a sad piece of news. Oh. I hate that. Joanna Cameron, star of DC's The Secrets of Isis from 1975, has died at the age of 70. She apparently suffered a stroke and passed away from complications. And she was the first female superhero on TV. She predates, what's her name? Bionic Woman, who came out in 76. And Wonder Woman, Linda Carter's Wonder Woman, who also came out in later in 76.
Hmm.
So, yeah, she was often teamed up with Shazam in the Shazam Hour, whatever that was. It was, you know, the old like 70s Shazam show.
Yeah.
Yeah, they aired them like back to back, and she would be on his show. I mean, yeah, she was a seemingly normal school teacher who transformed into the Egyptian goddess Isis. I don't know. She was a, trailblazer. That was the word I was looking for.
That's like, Feels like the template for the Hercules and Xena days was written there.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit, man. But yeah, like, it's hard to find.
They went in a very different direction.
They did. She continued to get more awesome, and
he
became crazy.
Yeah.
I believe the proper term is wing nut.
I was I was like jogging a few years ago, several years ago now, mm-hmm. and through one of the Birmingham parks, and there was like a lot of stuff going on. It was weird for me because I just went there that one day. It wasn't like a regular place for me.
Mm-hmm.
And found out later that all the congregation was because they were filming whatever the hell Sora was up to.
Oh.
That day.
Mm-hmm.
I later found out it was one of his like later films.
Mm. Was it like one of those Irwin Brothers things? Was he in one of those?
What's the Irwin Brothers?
Oh, they are a Christian filmmaking outfit. I don't even know. I can't remember the names of any of them at this point.
It was probably
that. They used to film in Birmingham a lot.
Yeah, it was probably that then. Yeah, for sure.
I can't remember like any of their... October Baby, I think, was one of them.
Yeah, like Kirk Cameron was probably somewhere on set.
No, not Kirk Cameron. They're honestly, their movies were like Fate films that were like a step above the normal Fate film. So not Kirk Cameron.
Oh, no. They
actually had some acclaim to them.
Okay. Possibly. I've never seen the result.
Yeah. Yeah, like a Kirk Cameron movie will just be like, oh, the guy's life is in total disrepair. And then he like reads a verse from the Bible and he totally like changes everything.
Yeah, everything
and
gets
he's
better.
Suddenly not the person he ever was before. And yeah, it's not like that.
Yeah.
They actually like, you know, I thought they did that movie Woodlawn. I remember that one. Mom's Night Out.
Oh, God.
I think. Or whatever that one was, or I can't remember if that was the name of it. It had Patricia Heaton and John Lovitz in it, of all things. Anyway.
It didn't so much have a minute. He just wandered around for a second and shouted, and they were like, we're keeping this.
Yeah.
We'll make it work.
He couldn't be bothered to remember the script. He was like, oh, I know. I'll just do my thing. Line! And everyone would think, oh, that's just him doing his thing.
He literally thought it was an open house, like to buy the house itself, and just wandered in and talked about things. Yep. There were cameras.
What do you mean you don't have a crawler?
It's a wonderful nook.
All right, let's get out of here, man.
All right.
Thank you guys so much for listening to DC on Screen. You can find every episode at dconscreen.com. and you can find our Patreon at patreon.com/dconscreen. I tweet at David C. Robertson. Jason tweets at DuckDuckGoss. And, come join us. Join our riotous debauch.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And be sure to tell everybody you know who might like this show, that we're a show, or that they should listen.
Nah. Tell a bunch of people that won't like it.
No, don't do that.
Yeah. Like, your parents. Just pick a random person in prison and like, you know, ask for a little invite.
Mm-hmm.
Head there.
Mm-hmm.
Go through all that trouble. And then tell them. And then just bounce.
No, because this study came out that said, like, you know, 73% of podcasts, new listeners from podcasts, come from word of mouth. People listen to their friends. They don't care if I share it on my Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That said, please share it on your Facebook. That's fine. But, you know, just, you know, me putting it out on social media is not going to grow it as much as you guys just going out and saying, hey, man, how you doing? Just like... like we were just talking about, you know, Christian movies, just do that, but with us. Be like, you know, evangelizing for DC on Screen. Just go up and put your hand on a friend's shoulder there.
Right.
And say, have you
heard the
accepted,
word? Yeah.
Have you accepted DC on Screen into your heart?
Of course. Yeah.
And
low.
You know, Jesus may have died for your sins, but these guys read news, so you didn't have to. Mm. And they sussed out what was right and wrong, what was a dirty scoop mill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't talk about that hashtag show.
It's the Lord's work.
It is. Now, it might be, you know, Aries' work, but, you know.
Fair. I mean, years ago, we used to talk about that hashtag show, but times have changed.
We did. Well, we wised up. Anyway, I swear to God, we're going to stop. Until next time, keep some DC on your screen.
Bye.
Our intro music is by Jason Goss and Michael Shackelford. Michael's band, Galactic Engineers of Magnetic Sounds, or GEMS, can be found on SoundCloud and Bandcamp. Visit DCOnScreen.com to find our Patreon, merch, contact information, and every episode of the show for free, including crossovers we've done with other podcasts. DC OnScreen is a maladjusted production. For more from me and Jason, including sketch comedy, vlogs, parodies, and our improvised web series Hey Guy, visit maladjusted.dv.